The opinions expressed in our talk shows are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WGCH Radio.
Welcome to Defy and Hustle Radio. This is Noreen Ehrlich.
Hey, everybody.
And the woman that's speaking across from me right now is Kelly Trepanie. Welcome, Kelly.
Hi.
How many times have you done the show now?
It's my third. This is technically like my third real show.
Technically? Why? Oh, that's right.
You were on for Frank Don.
Yeah, when we had on the horoscope guy. Mm-hmm. And did he get your horoscope right?
He did.
He did.
Yeah. He's actually going to be in town, I just heard.
Oh, he was good. I know that Daisy was excited about whatever he said to her. So that was an interesting show. I think people like horoscopes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, tonight we're going in a different direction with the show. You know what the show, the whole meaning behind it is Defy and Hustle. And by Defy, when I came up with that, I was really talking about defying some of the social conditioning that we're under, defying some of our own internal voices that might not be serving us in the long run. And then the hustle had to do with business, because I'm a business coach, so it was really getting out there and making things happen for yourself in the right direction, which can take a push sometimes. Mm-hmm. But we have a really fascinating show for you tonight. This is going to be probably one of the best shows, if not the best show we've done, because the person who is on the line waiting for us is somebody who had a movie made about him. He had books written about him, and he had a documentary made about him, and he's known from the presidents to the FBI to corporations and then to all different organizations now nationwide and maybe beyond. We'll have to ask him if he's speaking internationally, but
into countless family and friends. He's made a big wide reach around the globe.
Yeah, and it was a little bit of a twist and turn, which we'll get into, but
a long story of defying, you know, certain aspects of what he was up against inside of himself, as well as the world, in a huge hustle, you know, to get to the other side. I'm excited about this story.
Yeah, well, the person we have on the line his name is Mark Whitaker. You're like, I don't know who that is. You probably do know who that is, because Matt Damon starred in a movie, and he played the part of Mark Whitaker. And Mark Whitaker was The Informant, and that was a movie that came out in 2009. It was a little bit more of an obscure movie by Matt Damon. It's not all bling and a big Hollywood picture, but totally phenomenal and fascinating. So when I heard we were having him on the show, I was thrilled. And actually, as we looked into his story, then we realized this is an amazing,
brilliant dude,
yeah. And just a story with twists and turns that go beyond where the movie ends. So let's bring on to the phone Mark Whitaker. Mark, are you there?
Yes, good evening. I'm excited about being on the show with you.
Hi, Mark. We spoke earlier this week. How you doing?
Yes, very good. Very good. I'm excited about sharing with your audience.
Yeah.
Well, good. You're on in Greenwich, Connecticut. And where are you located right now?
I just located today for a speaking event in Miami, Florida for today. And
how's
just,
the weather
right
now?
Here today? 80 degrees and sunny, and I just spoke in Louisville, Kentucky yesterday, so much different weather between the two locations.
How many times do you speak generally a month, let's say?
Right now I'm speaking about 7 or 8 times a month, about 90 to 100 times per year the last couple years.
Wow. Okay. And then did Ginger meet you down, your wife Ginger, did she meet you down in Florida?
Yes, she did. She did.
And she was speaking with
you? She did. She'll be speaking with me at an event tomorrow together. She'll be doing the Q&A of event tomorrow.
All right. Well, very good. So why don't we do this, Mark? Why don't we start with you and Ginger, and you're living in Frankfurt, Germany, and you're 32 years old. And can you start to tell our audience? I figured let's take the audience through your story. It's so magical. So why don't we take you from Frankfurt and how you get over to Illinois and working at Archer Daniels Midland, the big food additive company.
Yes, it would have been in the 80s. And I graduated from Cornell with my PhD in biochemistry in 1983. And by 1985, I was living in Frankfurt, Germany. Ginger and I were. And I was working for a large chemical company, one of the largest in the world, a company called Degussa that's now named Avonic, about a $30 billion company at that time. Uh-huh. In 1985. I was located about 4 years in Frankfurt, Germany. They moved me there because I speak fluent German.
Okay.
So they moved us over to Germany, and that's where their world headquarters were. Their U.S. headquarters were in New York. And we were there a couple of years also before moving to Germany. And I was doing joint ventures for the company. At that point in 1989, I was vice president of the company doing acquisitions, mergers, joint ventures. And I was doing a joint venture with a company known as you had just mentioned, Archer Daniels Midland, known as ADM, out of Illinois. We were looking about building a food additive plant together. Looking at places in Europe and Southeast Asia as possibilities to build the plant. And I got to work with ADM for a couple years to the point where they made an offer. And at that point, boy, I was all about moving up the corporate ladder, 32 years old, and they made an offer that I couldn't refuse to move from Frankfurt, Germany to Decatur, Illinois.
So you come over to Decatur.
Quite a move.
It is a big move, and you grew up in Cincinnati, or you went.
That's correct.
So it must have been. Sometimes it's a relief. I worked overseas. Sometimes it's a relief to come home and get your family moving. And so, but you didn't go into the typical home when you got here. Tell us a little bit about you go and you meet with the CEO and you meet with the president and. You talk about meeting the pilots. The first people you meet are the pilots.
Yeah, I mean, it was exciting. It was October 1989. I was just, as you mentioned, 32 years old. And, 30 years ago, it would be this year 30 years ago. I'm 61 now, and I get to Decatur, Illinois. Decatur, Illinois has 80,000 people, and 30,000 are employees. So, I mean, talking about a company town. You either work at ADM, you're an employee of, or a spouse of someone that works at ADM. I mean, it's a very company-dominated town. Great town. We really enjoyed our 7.5 years where we lived there. We've got still friends there even still today. And so I get there, and I remember the first week, the 75-year-old CEO, the 69-year-old president. I'm number 4 ranked executive. There's only 3 executives above me. All of them double to triple my age. The 3, so I thought, boy, plenty of room to move up the corporate ladder here. There's 30,000 employees. I'm already number 4, and the guys above me are double to triple my age.
Mm-hmm.
So,
someone's going to.
So I remember the first thing the CEO did. He introduced me to 2 pilots for the 7 top executives. Each had their own Falcon 50s, and I was ranked number 4. So that was my first week at work. To get a Falcon 50, and boy, did I feel like a rock star.
You got a Falcon 50
in your first week there.
But
yes.
They gave you
like Bon Jovi.
You felt like Bon Jovi.
I had hair back then, too, by the way.
Did you? You're bald now?
Yes,
you deserve to be bald.
Your audience will see that if they go to my website, or just they Google me anywhere, they see pictures, and I'm bald now,
well, you
years
can
later.
Definitely check out markwhitaker.com too, because you'll see Mark, and or you can look on my social media. You've earned your boldness. Well, you get over there and you end up in not the standard home. You end up
in the president, right? In the CEO.
Well, basically, I ended up in the home. This is again my first month working there in October. The CEO was moving to he was CEO for 30 years there, the 75-year-old CEO and chairman, and he was moving to a smaller home, being that age, and moving something closer to the airport. His home was about 25, 30 minutes away from the Decatur airport in a little town called Mauiqua, Illinois, just a kind of a suburb of Decatur, about 20 miles south. And he was selling that home and shared about that home to me, and it was the home of John Daniels, the original founder of Archer Daniels Midland, 115 years earlier, this huge 1846-built mansion. I mean, a 13,000-square-foot house with an 8-car garage with horse riding stables and horse riding arena where your kids could ride in an inside arena during the wintertime. Golf greens on the property, swimming pool, security quarters for
you're
security guards.
You're on the top of the world, and you're only 32.
Yes, it was a mansion. I mean, it really was. And this all happened, the plane and the home, was my first month there in October 89.
And you were with
I thought, boy, if there's a heaven, this is it. That's what I was thinking at that point in my life.
You were with the company for,
how many years
were you?
Seven and a half years. All right. And so you're going up this corporate ladder. You're loving every second of it. You're hungry. You're young. You're incredibly smart. You're doing well there. And when do you start discovering about the price fixing that the company was involved in?
Well, basically, I got, in the company and worked hard. I was president of the biotech division and corporate vice president of the company, which was, like I said, the fourth ranked executive out of the 30,000 employees. And after they got to know me a couple years and got to trust me, and so it's a couple years now into it, almost 35 years old at that point in 1992, 3 years after I started, the vice chairman who I reported to, the number two in the company, came back to my office and bonus check and a huge set of stock options. I mean, 25,000 shares. I mean, it's almost $1 million worth of stock options just right there on that day. And it was at a time that it was not normal where we would get evaluated for performance based on your revenue growth of your division or margin growth, profitability, things of that sort. So I thought it was a little bit unusual, but he came back about an hour later and told me they were going to start showing me how ADM does business, that now they know me and trust me and going to start kind of showing me how they do business. And so they started bringing me into learning about how they were engaged with and involved with price fixing in an international cartel with the competitors of some of their food additives. And this was right after they gave me this bonus and this huge set of stock options. And I tell you, I mean, I was at a fork in the road, and there's no doubt I should have walked away, but I was so obsessed with that, living in that home and that having that title and even places even continue to move up. I mean, they were talking to me about being the CEO. I'm sorry, not CEO, but the COO and president, the number two of the company. So go from divisional president to company president is what the plan was. And I just could not imagine walking away from that.
So
with that fork in the road, I was hook, line, and sinker.
But they were so overt. They came in and did they sort of say it straight out and expect you to be cool with it, or did they just sort of allude to something they might be up to and hope you would just sort of go along with it?
Shares and up to almost $1 million, and it's like, well, look at this package you're about to get, and come into this back room, we're going to tell you what's really going on here.
Yeah, did you know right away?
They did. No, they. For it was an hour or so after the bonus.
Oh,
so that set
that's
in
right away.
And knew I was excited because that was all about moving up and being rewarded for the hard work that I was doing. I was giving them everything I had. I mean, from morning till night, I gave them everything I had, and they could see that for those three years prior to that date. And they started saying that, and I asked them. I said, "Was that legal?" And their comment was, the vice chairman's comment was, "Everybody does it, Mark. These politicians know nothing about business. These antitrust laws against price fixing were put on the books in the 1880s, 100 years earlier. Politicians didn't know anything about business." He said, "This is the way business is done." And here I am at that point, less than a decade out of Cornell, and here these guys are in their 70s, heading even towards 80. And I thought, well, they know a lot more than me. This must be the way the business is done, is what I was thinking.
You're probably right about that.
Yeah, you're thinking that. It probably has gone on a long time, but you're also this fork in the road, so you knew something was ultimately kind of wrong about it. But I think, and so many people around here can even relate, whoa, you've got your fancy big house, your fancy beautiful car, your life is put together, everyone's happy, the wife is happy. How do you just say no to all that?
Yeah,
keep in mind, this is seven figures with the bonuses and stock options. I'm 1989 earning seven figures
in
a year.
In Illinois,
Decatur, Illinois, right
up in Greenwich. It's a different story, but
yeah, that would be like $10 million a year today.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So you jump on the bandwagon with ADM and you're going along. What eventually made you perk your ears up and say, "This is wrong and I'm going to make a change"?
Well, my wife could tell something. I know my wife since she was in seventh grade and I was in eighth grade. That's how long we went for our first junior high dance. And then high school, we went to our proms together. And I was senior class president. She was treasurer of her class. She was the class behind me in high school. And both, you know, gifted students. And both went to Ohio State for our undergraduate. And then I went on for a master's at Ohio State and a PhD at Cornell. So we've been together since she was 13 and I was 14. So she could tell, by this point, we're close to 20 years married. She could tell something had changed. Something was weighing. You know, we got married in 1979. This would have been 1995. This would have been.
This would have been 1992
at that point. Mm-hmm. 92. So she could tell something was up and something has changed. And so she sent me down one evening. It was November 5th, 1992. And she said, "Mark, what's going on with your life? Something's changed these last 7 months since April of 92. And so I shared with her how they were training me to take over this international cartel.
So you tell her they're price fixing at ADM and they're price fixing lysine, or what was the, just for the audience, explain the price fixing.
Well, the first product that at least was involved with my division was an ingredient called lysine, about a $1 billion market for that ingredient. That one goes into set of foods, it goes into feed, but if they buy a Tyson poultry or Purdue, and they go to the grocery store and they buy chicken breasts or chicken legs or whole chicken or turkeys or pork products, well, those animals were fed lysine in the feed, and it's a healthy additive, so it's a good product. But that is used to grow commercially poultry and swine.
Okay,
they would buy pork products and chicken. And then ADM makes other products like high fructose corn syrup and citric acid that goes into beverage and mm-hmm. lactic acid like in soups and cereals. So they're in the food additive, feed additive, one of the largest food additive and feed additive company in the world.
Okay, and then how does it get passed? It gets passed through the price fixing gets passed through to the consumer, or?
It does get passed to the consumer.
So what, it adds like $2 to $4.
It would be sold to like a Kellogg's, or yeah. In the lysine, it would be like the large, in your grocery store, you'd see Tyson poultry or Purdue poultry and so on. You know, it would be passed to the food processor. Coca-Cola and Pepsi for the high fructose corn syrup would pay for that. But when these food processors pay higher for the ingredients, they're going to pass that increase to the consumer in the grocery stores.
Okay. All right. So Ginger is sitting down, and she's like, "Oh, Mark, so why do you seem so stressed out? And you've been working so hard. I never see you anymore." And you say, "Honey, what?
I'm involved in this international cartel, and I'm making millions of dollars for you."
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, good, honey.
It didn't quite happen that casual like that, but it was more those 7 months when I'm engaged with it and I wasn't sharing it with her. A lot of our competitors in the food additive business are international, especially mm-hmm. in Asia. Uh-huh. So I had a lot of phone calls working out these details of this price fixing. It's a lot of work to break the law, by the way. A lot of work.
Yeah,
we could have been some more legal and been more efficient.
Good to know.
So we're spending all these hours at night, because 8 o'clock at night in Decatur, Illinois is 8 o'clock in the morning in South Korea and Japan, where right. our competitors are. Mm-hmm. So I'm talking to them at night, and Ginger's thinking, why in these last 7 months is he talking to all these people at night? And, you know, that's the question when I told her. I said, well, there are competitors. And when I named the names of the companies, Ajinomoto and Kiwako and so on, she knew immediately who they were, some of the largest lysine producers in the world, and Miwan. And she said, well, why would you be talking to your competitors? She asked that direct question. And then I shared with her.
Okay, so...
And then what happens?
She says, honey, I'm so proud of you.
No, she didn't say that at all. She started asking lots of questions, as Ginger does. And she started saying, Mark, is this legal, what's going on? She said, how much does the company earn? I said, the company earns hundreds of millions of dollars, even close to $1 billion a year extra if you take all the ingredients that are being included in the price-fixing scheme. And she asked me how long was going on. I said, this has been going on for years. I mean, they tell me it's been 12 years, and it was proven in court that to be the case, too, 12 years before I even joined the company, and close to $1 billion a year extra profit, net pre-tax profit. And she said, well, who pays for that? And I explained to her how the consumer is paying that. You know, when they go to the grocery and they buy $50 worth of groceries, they're paying maybe $4 or $5 extra from what's increased from those ingredients that are in those foods that's in their grocery cart, foods and beverages. I said, $4 or $5 only. And then she asked that question. I'll never forget. She said, you mean my grandma on Social Security, a couple hundred dollars a week Social Security, and she's paying higher groceries because of this? And we live in a mansion with an 8-car garage with Ferrari and 2 Mercedeses and 2 BMW. I mean, that it was a 32-year-old dude full of himself with an 8-car garage. He fills it up. And that's what I did. And she said, how can we do this? How can you get involved with such a fraud like this? And she challenged me like that. And then I tried to use the excuse that I was told that I really believed in. Well, everybody does it. These laws on the books shouldn't be there. This is the way business is done. If you're in the commodity business, you have to do this. And she was not buying an excuse like I did. She was not buying it.
She's good for her.
She's a, were you religious or...
She was a Christian about 10 years before me, and I was not a Christian at that time. I became a Christian years later at age 40 after kind of when I kind of got the end of myself through this case. But she was, and then she made a comment that she was going to go in her study and pray about it, and we talk about it later and actually pray. And I knew then when she said she was going to pray about it, I was in trouble. And so, a couple hours later, she told me, she said, I have to turn myself in to the federal authorities.
The federal authorities. So now, how long does it take you to turn yourself into the federal authorities, and how did that go down, and how did you become the informant?
We ended up that very day. So here's a case that's going on well over a decade, a case that I'm involved with for 7 months, and we end up sharing with the FBI that very day. And the amazing thing is it took a stay-at-home mom raising 3 young children to blow the whistle. At that time, the largest price-fixing case in U.S. history at that time. I think it's the third largest case still today, 30 years later.
So she's the moral compass.
Yes, she is. She really is. And I had the choice when I shared for 4 hours with the FBI. I had the choice, and I would have never done it without Ginger. Ginger is definitely the whistleblower in this case. And there's, as your audience needs to know, there's a huge difference between a whistleblower and informant. A whistleblower sacrifices everything to do the right thing. My wife sacrificed everything. A husband was making millions, living in a mansion with an 8-car garage, fly anywhere, anytime she wanted to, and she sacrificed it all to do the right thing. An informant is someone sitting in front of the FBI, and you have a choice to be arrested or wear a wire, and that was me. And there's a huge difference between the two.
So you choose the wire.
So you choose, yes. So
yes, I did, and that's the choice I had, and I chose the wire. When we first were going to the FBI to share, we thought they would tap phones. We thought they would then go do the heavy lifting and do the hard work.
Right.
Neither Ginger and I, being young and naive, had any idea that I was going to have to be the evidence collector.
You ended up collecting evidence for 3 years. 3 years you put on a wire every morning.
At 6 a.m. you met with them, and you put... what we understand is a wire on your body, a wire in your notebook, right, and a wire in your briefcase. And to the extent that you were in meetings with this cartel around the world, you had they had a video camera in a green lamp.
Yes, yes. They shaved my chest at 6 o'clock in the morning, hooked microphones to my chest, had a tape recorder attached to my back with an athletic band around my waist, one in a briefcase and one in a... in a notebook. That way, if case one stopped working, you'd always have another one working. And then during the actual huge international cartel meetings, when I would tell them the locations where they would be in various hotels all around the world, they would then have a green lamp put in there that had a video camera that they could also video this huge crime taking place in action.
And nobody noticed the lamp? It was the same lamp
in every... That green lamp was at 2 or 3 meetings a month. I mean, it was at the Shangri-La Hotel in Singapore. Shortly after that, a couple of weeks, it was in the Mandarin Hotel in Hong Kong. The same 11 guys. Then it was in a meeting in the Irvine Marriott Hotel in California, the Four Seasons Hotel in Chicago. That green lamp was 2 or 3 times a month with us for 3 years. And no one saw it. And I look back and I say, thank God we didn't have a woman criminal among us. Because the woman, I think, would say, hey, that green lamp is falling.
I would notice it right away. Oh, all right. So now this must have been, I mean, what was going on? So every day you're
stressful.
Going into the office.
I'd be like sweating. How did you keep it a secret?
Yeah, I mean, you're running. You're playing with two faces here, running the organization during the day, and yet knowing that you're not really on the side of the organization. So
And taking down all these people that you've worked so closely with the past couple years.
Yeah.
I tell you, it was the hardest years, looking back 1992 to 1995. I mean, harder than prison. It was the hardest years of my life. For one, the FBI, as they're wiring me up, and in the documentary on my website, they see that as the four agents, the real agents that were involved with that case, now all retired, share that on the documentary. I mean, they would say, Mark, if these guys catch you, they're going to kill you. This is billions of dollars at stake. People going to prison. This is serious stuff. I mean, they would warn me that every morning when they wired me up. And to know that put a lot of extra pressure on me. Obviously, we're in a wire 9-10 hours a day for 3 years, every Monday through Friday. But in addition to that, friends of mine that would walk in my office or walk down the hall with me or any contact with me at all, and they're sharing, they're not even criminal. They're not even involved with a criminal act. They're not part of the price fixing, and they're just sharing personal stories, a problem with a spouse or an in-law or a teenage child with drug problem. And just for me to think that they're on tape, and it just made me, I mean, I went from an extroverted person to introvert. I did not want anybody to be talking to me knowing that they're being taped.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever just say, I'm not doing this anymore? Or did you ever confide in anybody? How did you cope?
I did. I tried to tell the FBI several times, and it discusses that also in that Discovery Channel documentary that was produced in 2010. There were several times that I talked to them. I said, I don't know if I can do that. But I didn't have a choice. I mean, I had already confessed, and I did not have a choice. And my wife begged, especially the last year, year and a half, she begged him, and I didn't even know this. I mean, I found this out afterwards. She was begging them to have a psychiatrist or somebody see me because she said, my husband's falling apart. He's gonna kill himself. He's lose 50, 60 pounds. He's having a nervous breakdown. He's not sleeping at night. He's blowing leaves off the driveway during thunderstorms at 3 a.m. She said, my husband is falling apart. And she wanted me hospitalized, but the FBI thought if I was hospitalized, the doctor's going to say, hey, this guy can't wear a wire anymore. And they needed the evidence.
Okay, so did they tell you, well, look, you're only going to have to do this for 3 years? Did you have any sort of light at the end of the tunnel that you were like, okay, if I just get through another day, or it was indefinite?
They originally said when I started wearing a wire on November 5th, 1992, the next day they wired me up after I confessed to them, they originally said it would be about a six-week process.
I think
they really thought it would be, but they thought then it was just lithy. But then when they started hearing that, price fixing on citric acid and sodium gluconate and lactic acid, it became such a bigger case to them and such widespread international cartel and multiple products and multiple divisions that it just, every time someone bragged about their illegal activity on tape, it became another case.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it was probably like the Mueller case is happening in the background there. They're looking at one thing and it exposes
spreading.
Everything.
And there's a fascinating dynamic going on here because as the informant, you were getting all this information for them. You were going to get a clean slate. You were going to be walk free, but you didn't end up walking free. So what started happening as you realized this company, even as you were taking this company down, it's my understanding that you didn't even quite realize it was going down and you were gearing up to become the president of the company and you still thinking I have a future here. And when you started to realize that wasn't the case, what did you begin to do?
Yeah, basically, I had full immunity. After wearing a wire for a few months, they had the U.S. attorney in Chicago sign a full immunity agreement. They were so appreciative. I mean, to them, it was like they were unbelievable, appreciative, and encouraging to me. All four of the agents, the U.S. attorney, that signed the agreement said, "Mark, you are risking your lives for us, and you will never do one day of jail. You will never have a felony on your record. You have full immunity. All you have to do is let us know about any illegal activity that's occurring and make sure we're aware of it. That way we can capture it and have it on tape, and you have full immunity." And about that last year, for one, I'm falling apart. I'm brushing horses at 3 a.m. I'm blowing driveways off during thunderstorms. My wife's pulling me off the driveway at 3 a.m. during thunderstorms with a gas leaf blower. I'm falling apart during that year. And thinking of these guys are going to kill me when I'm in court. Someday I've got to testify against them. And they're going to kill me, I'm thinking. And then the reality did start setting in from Ginger and the agents telling me, you know, that Mark, when this is over, we're getting closer now, you're probably not going to have a place at ADM. I know you think you're the next president.
and
the company told you that on tape even, that they're preparing you for the next president. But the board member has lots of family members that aren't part of this crime on the board, lots of friends. 17 board members, you're probably not going to have a home there. And when I started realizing, I looked at all these stock options I had. I remember looking at it, calculating by hand, if I could exercise them today, it would have been like $9 million. And it was a couple years even before I could even exercise them. I said, boy, I'm not going to have these stock options. I'm not going to get these bonuses. Who's going to hire somebody wear a wire against their own company? It's easier to get a job as a felon than a whistleblower. So I thought, who's going to hire me? And I'm only in my mid-30s. And so what I started doing at that point, knowing that it was coming to an end, knowing that I was not going to make it to the point where I could even exercise millions of dollars, at that point about $9 million of stock options, I thought, well, I'm going to do it myself. And I started paying myself checks, five of them total, that added up to about $9 million. And I thought, thank God I went to Cornell. I'm the smartest guy in this room, I thought. I've got my stock options. I've got my bonuses. I've got several years to get on my feet, even when I don't have any job after wearing a wire for 3 years.
Well, embezzlement sounds like a good time to take a break.
Yeah. So, all right. So, Mark. Audience, we are talking right now with Mark Whitaker. He is telling us about his famous case, which was made into a movie but it was called The Informant, and it starred Matt Damon. And he was the original whistleblower and the original informant.
The youngest whistleblower in one of the largest cases at the time in America.
And he's telling us about now how he got involved in price fixing and whistleblowing and becoming an informant for the FBI. I want you to hang on, audience, and come back right after the break. Mark,
we're going to get into jail
and his redemption journey. Yeah, because he did go to jail. So we're going to find out how exactly that happened and what went on after that. Hold on, everybody. We'll be right back.
Well, good evening. Our travel time on the northbound Connecticut Turnpike is still about a half hour to travel north from the state line up to Route 7. The northbound Merritt Parkway, we're looking at a 24-minute ride from the state line up to Route 7. Drunk driving, 100% preventable, 100% of the time. Help them create a future of no more victims at MADD.org. That's MADD.org. I'm Jay Trelace in the 1490 WGCH Traffic Center.
From the WGCH Weather Center.
Mostly clear and cold tonight, lows 25 to 30. Tomorrow, mostly sunny, highs 50 to 55. More clouds tomorrow night, a few rain showers late at night, a low near 40. And morning clouds to partial sunshine, upper 50s on Friday. The Easter Rabbit has hopped into UK Gourmet, delivered all that super creamy British and Irish chocolate bunnies and giant eggs. Order online at ukg.life. I'm meteorologist Ryan Gallagher on 1490 WGCH.
What if I told you I could change your life in just 100 days? This is Noreen Ehrlich from Defy and Hustle Radio. I'm an executive coach based in Greenwich, Connecticut. For over two decades, I worked as a CFO and leader in Wall Street's fast-paced private equity industry. I helped guide teams of professionals to improve their careers, grow their businesses, and still maintain work-life balance. Based on this know-how and my unique understanding of life's principles, I created a 100-day plan that will unquestionably up-level your life. Make 2019 your year. You can and deserve to have it all. Don't wait. Take advantage of my free 50-minute consultation by visiting my website at NoreenEhrlich.com or calling me at
475-333-2173. WGCH 1490. Well, good evening. Our travel time on the northbound Connecticut Turnpike is still about a half hour to travel north from the state line up to Route 7. The northbound Merritt Parkway, we're looking at a 24-minute ride from the state line up to Route 7. Drunk driving, 100% preventable, 100% of the time. Help them create a future of no more victims at MADD.org. That's MADD.org. I'm Jay Trelace in the 1490 WGCH Traffic Center.
From the WGCH Weather Center.
A few high clouds drifting through, but skies will average mostly clear tonight. Another cold one, lows 25 to 30. Milder tomorrow with abundant sunshine, highs 50 to 55. Tomorrow night becoming mostly cloudy, a few late night rain showers, the low near 40. Morning cloudiness breaks for some partial sunshine. Friday, highs 55 to 60. Partly sunny, mild, low 60s on Saturday. I'm meteorologist Ryan Gallagher on 1490 WGCH.
Are you a business owner who's suffering from what I call the entrepreneur's dilemma? That means you have a successful business, but you're so caught up in operations that you are overwhelmed. Maybe you're capital constrained, or you just know that you can scale your business to another level, but you need help doing that. This is Noreen Ehrlich from Defiant Hustle Radio. I'm an executive coach based in Greenwich, Connecticut. For over two decades, I worked as a CFO and CPA in Wall Street's fast-paced real estate private equity industry, where I helped start up and turn around hundreds of underperforming businesses. Based on this know-how, I created a 100-day plan that I tailor to your business to make sure that you streamline operations, drive performance, and generate profits fast. Don't wait. Take advantage of my free 50-minute consultation by visiting my website at noreenehrlich.com or by calling me at 475-333-2173.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the show. This is Noreen Ehrlich, and we have a great guest here today. We're going to get back to him in just a moment, but first I wanted to tell you about a great organization that just moved into Greenwich and into Darien. If you are suffering with any sort of osteoporosis, if you have joint and back pain, you want to build up your strength, your posture, your balance, osteostrong.com. Check it out, osteostrong.com. They're on Putnam Avenue in Greenwich next to Whole Foods, and they're in Darien in the Good Wives Plaza. They're brilliant because they are putting together technology with your strength. You go into OsteoStrong for 10 to 15 minutes, and you go through a circuit, and you will build up your strength. The people that are using this service are having real recoveries from experiences they were having where they had chronic back pain or joint pain, or where they were on pain medicine, or where stretching wasn't helping them. And I even joined. I joined back in January because I had a lot of neck pain and back pain. And I find it's I was skeptical at first, but you go in there, you go through it very quickly, and you just start to reverse some of the issues you've been struggling with for years. And I wanted to introduce you to a woman. She's a Greenwich resident, and her name is Edely Smith, and here's her testimonial.
I just want to say that ever since I've been coming here, I haven't had as much pain as I've been having, because I was going to the pain center for cortisone shots, and I've been coming here, and I've been pain-free.
Okay, so that was just one of the people. There's more testimonials where that comes from, but check it out online, osteostrong.com, and you can call now at 203-900-1661 and mention Noreen Ehrlich or Defiant Hustle Radio, and you'll win a free computerized balance test and lounge chair massage. It's a hydro lounge chair, and it's wonderful. So call 203-900-1661. Mention my name and tell them you heard about them on my show, and it's osteostrong.com. Great product. Okay, now back to the show for everybody. I apologize for the long break there, but we have to get back to our story. We have Mark Whitaker, the original whistleblower, and the man who was the center of the informant movie where Matt Damon played his role. So, Mark, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Good to be back.
Good to be back. Sorry for that long break there, but we jammed it all into one break. So Mark, you were telling our audience about now you're going through a delusional stage. You've been wearing a wire. You're at Archer Daniels Midland for years, and you're about to break down. Now you've embezzled $9 million, and you have the FBI still have you. They still have you wearing a wire. What starts to happen now?
You know, at that point, I really didn't look at it. I look back now, and there's no doubt it was fraud and embezzlement. There's no doubt. But at that stage, I did not. For one, after wearing a wire for 3 years, I was falling apart anyway. But I didn't see it as embezzlement. I looked at it, well, they're going to owe me this on these stock options. And I'm not, and I'm really risking. But you have to, this was a 5 set of stock options, and I'm only going to be about 3.5 years into it before I could exercise them. So I looked at, well, gosh, FBI, you've caused this. If I wasn't wearing this a wire, I'm 1.5 years from a $9 million bonus that I've worked for the last several years for. At that point, I was 7 years at the company. So I really didn't see it as embezzlement. I really felt at that stage that was really owed to me.
It was entitlement.
And especially the fact I risked my career and no one was going to hire somebody who wore a wire, I thought. So I, even though I look now, you know, with a clear mind, that was a clear fraud. At that stage, I thought I was just getting what was owed to me. I really did at that stage. I risked my life. I'm not going to get these stock options now that I would if I'm still with a company a year later. And so, therefore, I'm taking what's mine is what I felt. And so the FBI was so appreciative. I mean, obviously, when ADM learned that I was informant, when the case went public and they had 70 agents raid the headquarters and take computers and paperwork and everything to support all the tapes of the price fixing and financial statements of the products and so on. At that point, when the company learned quickly that I was the one gathering the evidence, the one wearing the wire, they then immediately called the FBI and said, hey, he's no white knight informant. He stole $9 million from them. So they were okay with it when I was working for them because, you know, how could they turn me in? They're involved with $1 billion theft a year. I was the most protected guy in America. They couldn't turn me in. But once they knew that I put them in flames, they made a decision, those top executives, let's put Mark in flames, too.
Mm-hmm. So they went to jail, some of the head people
at
ADM.
And lots of companies did.
So it went beyond ADM.
Oh, yes.
And then you were supposed to go to jail for 6 months, but...
Yes, that's right. For the $9 million, when ADM informed the FBI that I took this $9 million, and then I tried to say, well, yeah, but what about all these stock options? I mean, and Saul, clearly this wasn't a defense because you have to wait till the exercise date of stock options. You can't exercise things 1.5 years early. So when they saw that, hey, here's a fraud here, and there's no doubt about it, it's a fraud, and wire fraud and mail fraud and all the different federal laws that fit into that exercise, by writing those 5 checks to myself, at that point they fought hard with the U.S. attorney and said, look, this is a guy that wore a wire for 3 years. We should have never had him wear a wire that long. They have a guideline. They don't even allow an informant to wear a wire longer than 1 year now, partly because of my case, FBI guidelines. But at that stage, they argued to the U.S. attorney, and the U.S. attorney agreed, said, you know what? Mark was falling apart. You guys didn't give him the help he needed. We'll give him a 6-month sentence, 6-month plea agreement, deal of a lifetime for that $9 million fraud. And all I had to do was signed that plea agreement, and I again got in my own way.
You're too smart. You're too smart.
Well, you didn't think you deserved any jail time, right? And
so you
got rid of your lawyer.
You got rid of your lawyer.
And thought you could get no jail. Thought you should get off, what is it?
Scot-free.
Yeah.
Yeah, I felt that way because I risked my life for these guys. You know, even falling apart, just because wearing a wire, I was falling apart. And Ginger wanted me to sign. We were in front of my attorney, and Ginger wanted me to sign that plea agreement. And I looked at Ginger and said, Ginger, you're the one that got me in this mess in the first place. Blame her for all
you,
of
husband.
It. Yeah. And ripped that up in front of her. If she told me not to sign it, I probably would have signed it. I was going to do the opposite she wanted me to do. I was so furious in that stage of my life to where I found myself. And at that point, trying to blame everybody else, I ripped it up in front of her. I fired that lawyer and hired other lawyers and fought the case for 3.5 years to get a 10-year sentence later when I had a 6-month plea agreement right in my hand.
So you got 10.5-year sentence?
And ended up serving 9, right?
You have to do 8.5. Eight years and 8 months. You get 15. Mm-hmm. There's no parole in the federal system. You get 15% off good behavior. State cases have parole, but federal cases don't. So 15% gave me an 8 years and 8 months. So about an 8.5-year sentence I had to do on a 10.5-year sentence.
Now, Mark, why did that 8.5-year sentence end up being a bigger blessing in serving you as opposed to that 6-month sentence?
You know, when I knew I had to do 8.5 years, when I knew I could have had a 6-month sentence 3 years earlier, and went in at age 41 and got out at age 41 instead of going in at age 41 and getting out of prison at age 49, 13 years ago in 2006, I wrote a 17-page letter to Ginger and my 3 children, and I tried to kill myself. I couldn't imagine going to prison 9 years. I thought I wouldn't even have a family when I got out. What wife would withstand all that? And I thought I wouldn't have a family. Who's going to hire me coming out at age 49? Why live? And I tried to take my own life, and I was hospitalized for a month. And during that month, the doctors diagnosed me with bipolar disorder, and I was treated for bipolar disorder, and I started seeing the reality. For one, it was a little depressing because I saw the reality of what I did, but it also brought so much more clarity. It took me from that psychotic delusional phase to reality, and life started changing. And there's also a couple guys that reached out to me, a couple guys I'd call mentors. One of them was a guy named Ian House, a CFO of a pharmaceutical company. Another one, Chuck Colson, started pouring into my life. And I became a Christian also during that point, during my third month in prison. And it's amazing, Noreen and Kelly, that I'm in prison at $20 a month for 8.5 years after earning about $2-3 million a year for 7.5 years. And I started helping guys get their GEDs and learn how to read and learn how to write. And I tell you, the 8.5 years in prison were the most productive years of my life. I mean, for the first time in my life, I really helped somebody else but myself.
I'm sure.
I think
really
that
rewarding
treatment for bipolar, and then actually seeing the reality and clearing my mind of the psychosis that I was in at that point, especially after wearing a wire, it went from a manic phase to a psychotic phase, and being treated that I needed, chemically treated, for a chemical imbalance, and then having God in my life. I tell you, in 1998, both with the treatment and having God in my life, it put my life in a different direction, even in prison.
You call it servant leadership.
Yes, I do. I do. I felt I went in as a very selfish leader. I felt all of us that went to prison, we were selfish leaders, all basically looking at greed as the purpose of our life. And in prison, when I'm helping, saw how rewarding it was to help other people. I became a servant leader in prison, and I've lived that ever since I've got out for 13 years, how rewarding it is for the last 20 years to help other people. And it took me going to prison to learn that, and I thank God today for going to prison. And I think a 6-month sentence, my wife and I both agree. She even said it on national news. She said, I think my husband would have came out the same greedy man he went in with a 6-month Martha Stewart sentence.
Mm-hmm.
She said, I think God gave exactly what he needed, was 9 years. I think 2 years would have been enough, by the way. But, but I know 6 months, would not have been. And it was a long journey, a tough journey. But it's a messy story with a good ending. But today, I'm glad it happened.
I'm glad it happened to you as well, to be frankly honest. I think it's a tremendous story that so many people, when they hit rock bottom, they don't even still realize what brought them there and don't necessarily get to rebuild themselves. And when someone does, they end up being such a huge blessing for all of us and a guiding post. And it's great to get your message out, especially because a lot of us don't even have to deal with that degree of trial and struggles that you were up against, or the stress for all those years. And so if someone in your position can do it and face all that fear and still succeed and rebuild his life, it gives hope for many others around the world.
Yeah. And it's amazing that I get out of prison in 2006, and I thought, my family, Ginger and I are married 40 years in June. She visited me in prison every weekend. She moved to 3 different states because with good behavior, you move to better places. She moved to 3 different states where I was located, visited 20 hours a weekend. Our marriage and our family and our relationship with our children, better than ever. After 3 years wearing a wire and 8.5 years in prison, I was hired back in the biotech industry the day I got out of prison. I had 4 offers the day I got out of prison. And I joined a biotech company. Obviously, when you're involved with a $9 million fraud, you don't start off the head of finance, obviously. But I had a job and working in a cancer research company. After 4 promotions, I became the COO, the number 2 of that company.
This was even your school, right? Cornell helped you while you were in prison. They helped
did.
You lobby jobs for you. Even the food companies that were involved with the scheme or may have been impacted by the scheme helped you this afterwards. Sort of you called it better, not bitter.
Yeah, well, our family really did become bitter. And it's amazing, the victims of the price fixing that won hundreds of millions of dollars back from ADM in class action suits, they gave Ginger a whistleblower reward and took care of my family financially while I was in prison. That's a miracle.
It is a miracle.
It's a miracle.
It is a miracle.
Well, Mark, we're coming to our close shortly.
What I wanted to do, so now you're just out on the road and you're working at this organization, Cypress, as the CFO, a COO, and then you're right. out speaking. You do a regular speaking service,
Tour engagements.
And I just am curious, there was in the news this week, for example, there were so many stories of scandal and transparency and corruption. There was this story about Purdue Pharma just paid some astronomical hundreds of millions of dollars to, I think, the state of Oklahoma for their part in the opioid crisis. And you hear other stories of corruption and behind the scenes, like that face that they give the public versus what goes on behind the scenes. Do you have hope right now for what we're doing in humanity?
I do. And like even this week, even I'm doing an ethics compliance event. I just booked an event for Coca-Cola Consolidated just last week in Charlotte, North Carolina, where they're headquartered. That's the Consolidated, the bottling company, not Coca-Cola in Atlanta. They're doing the distribution. And I do a lot of faith-based events for CBMC. I'm actually COO of a nonprofit, too, called CBMC, Christian Businessmen Connection, about executives that want to run their companies more God's way than their way, faith-based companies.
Which is awesome.
And I do events doing Overcome Adversity. And I tell you, I do see that if you change the heart, where you look at from a servant leadership instead of a selfish leadership, it changes things, how companies run. It changes the culture. It does.
Don't you think we're on the verge of change, too?
Yeah. I do. And I see lots of companies changing. I do. I mean, it doesn't mean that we won't see a fraud in the paper here tomorrow.
Of course.
I think we're going to see a lot of them.
Companies want to change.
But as the more it comes out, the more it's righting those wrongs and, you know, shifting into a new era.
Yeah, at least it's bringing it out into the light so we can deal with it.
Well, Mark, thank you so much for being on the show with us today. It was really great to hear your story.
Yeah,
thank you for having me. It's been great to share.
I'm so thrilled and so honored that you came on our show. I think you have a phenomenal story. I really feel very lucky that you're a light out there in the world and reaching, that you have the influence, that this gave you the influence to go into organizations and speak the truth to people and inspire people to get over their self-deceit, as the case may be, and mm-hmm. move on to also be a light in the world. So this is really wonderful, and I wish you the best of luck with that.
Defy the hot
thank you very
odds
much.
And keep hustling.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me.
All right, bye, Mark.
Bye. Good luck in regards to Ginger. She's a powerhouse. I'm amazed by her.
She's the rock.
She is a rock.
Thank you very much.
All right, good luck to you. All right. Thank you, everybody. This is Noreen Ehrlich and Kelly
Trepanier.
We're signing off from Defy and Hustle this week. We hope you enjoyed the show, and we have more like that coming. So we'll see you here next week. Take care. Bye-bye. Tell me who are you?
The Voice of Greenwich. This is 1490 WGCH Greenwich.